You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Very excited about this because I believe per square foot, you will get no better coverage of sports business, no more expertise anywhere than you will when these two guys get together, David Sampson and John Skipper. David Sampson ran the Marlins for many years. Skipper ran ESPN for many years. So let's start with what's going on with the DC Commanders. Daniel Snyder refuses to testify, is hiding in the shadows. Roger Goodell will testify before the House Oversight Committee. Sampson, what are your general thoughts here on who is testifying and who's not testifying?
Well, Danny Boy's not hiding. He's on his yacht in the south of France, so he's certainly available. But here's the thing. He's scared of appearing there because they will not let him control the narrative. They will not let him submit a list of questions he'll answer. And he doesn't want to be anywhere without his lawyers. Roger Goodell, however, will go virtual. Danny could have. So Roger goes virtual and is truly taking one for the team here. And I don't mean the Commanders. I mean for the other 31 owners, because the NFL's got to get rid of the narrative that they have workplace misconduct issues. But if Roger Goodell has a chance to hang Danny Snyder out to dry, he'll do it.
Yeah, I'm going to say two things on behalf of Daniel Snyder, and that'll be the end of that. The first is he didn't refuse to testify. He declined the invitation.
Oh my God, John, are you serious? Tomato. He totally refused to testify because they wouldn't play by his rules.
Well, the second thing I'll say on his behalf is the south of France this time of year is lovely. And I can understand why an owner whose stadium deal is a mess right now, whose team is embroiled in defending itself against a toxic work environment, and whose assistant coach thinks that thousands of people breaking windows, looting into the Capitol is a dust up, and whose standard for what is not really a problem is anything that where nothing is burned. I think it's, you know, if you're sort of looking at that and whether or not you should be fixing that or whether or not you should be in the south of France, tough decision.
Meanwhile, while he's in the south of France, the value of his team goes up like the debt clock in the middle of Times Square in New York City. So I'm not exactly sure whether or not Dan Snyder cares what anyone thinks about him because of his asset value. Ted Lerner, John, you'll like this. Ted Lerner, I don't know if you've met him, the owner of the Nationals, who has given control to his son, and that team is now for sale. He sat me down at a meeting once, and we were talking, and I loved him like a grandfather. And I was asking him about all the negative press that he was getting because he got absolutely crucified before they won a World Series. And he said, guess what? When I wake up tomorrow morning, I still own the team.
It's good. You think
that's it?
Do you think Daniel Snyder still cares if he owns the team, given the prices of the franchises?
I think that he cares that he does own the team and can sell it if he chooses to, or if it's part of his estate plan, or if even if the NFL forces him to sell. We all talk about that as such a great punishment. It's not like Donald Sterling or Frank McCourt are at a shelter because they were forced to sell, or Marge Schott, any of them. Daniel Snyder is going to get, especially with what the Broncos got, he's going to get $7 or $8 billion for that team.
Do you think we've talked before, David, about sort of counting the owners of who will vote to tell Daniel Snyder he must sell the team? Do you think that it is possible that Roger Goodell taking one for the team here is partly counting the votes here?
Yeah, I think it really depends on what's going on with their stadium deal. I think that's going to have a bigger impact. If you had, as an example, in Miami, let's pretend that the politicians in Miami had called up Bud Selig and said, we will not do a deal with Jeffrey Loria, no matter what. So either the team moves, the team gets contracted, but we're not working with this guy. That would have definitely forced baseball to do something, either call their bluff and move the team, which the NFL is not going to do with Washington, or call their bluff and say, well, good luck in FedEx Field forever and never get another World Cup. So I think what happens here is that if Virginia and DC and Maryland say to Goodell, we're not working with Snyder, we're just not going to do it, I think that would give him the strength to count the votes and assure the other owners that We're not coming after you ever. This is a one-off situation.
John, you mentioned the sale, the Walton family, Walmart family, $4.65 billion. Not surprising that they would keep it in-house and align themselves with this particular brand. What were your takeaways from this sale price?
Well, the biggest takeaway is that the upside for franchise value is huge. And we've talked a lot about why that is. It is a lot about scarcity and the perceived prestige of owning a team. The last record for the NFL was $2.3 billion for the Charlotte Panthers. They've just doubled that. A couple of 3 years ago, the Forbes reported that the value of the Broncos was about $1.7 billion. A couple of years later, they reported it was $3.7 billion. Now it's $4.7 billion. They are also reported to be the 10th or 11th most valuable NFL franchise. So to David's point, the Commanders are above that. So they are now worth well north of $5 billion. So to me, it's just overwhelmingly about the franchise values will continue to climb.
I think the other takeaway that we really shouldn't keep this quiet part quiet anymore is when these prices go up like this, which now it's every team is in the billions and billions of dollars, you are actually thinning out the capable bidders. So Walton buys the team. He writes a check the way Steve Ballmer did for the Clippers when he wrote a $2 billion check and may have sold some Microsoft stock. Walton does the same thing, sells a little Walmart, boom, you got yourself a team. The NFL talks about how important, Roger Goodell said this when the Bolin kids were fighting, we want a minority partner. We want a black majority owner. With the prices going the way they are and the number of capable bidders, because they don't want huge groups because that leads to fighting and litigation, the people who can write a check like that, it's not very large and it's mostly old and white. So to me, these leagues are going to make things worse in terms of the way their ownership looks. But I know that current owners don't care about the way it looks. They want to sell to the highest bidder.
I would only point out, I agree with all that. I'd point out two things. The first is that with the continued dramatic concentration of gigantic wealth in the hands of a few people, those are the people who can buy a team, right? This is trivial to Rob Walton. It's less than 10% of his worth. The second I would point out is that Melody Hobson, the CEO of Ariel, is one of the minority owners of this team, a black woman. So they did accomplish that in this deal.
Ron Rivera, you mentioned, and I was curious if, David, you had any thoughts on what I thought was really unusual. Jack Del Rio, an assistant coach, $100,000 fine from a head coach, a credible head coach, because he said some of the things that Skipper and a lot of people would object to, calling a threat to American democracy, a dust-up. What did you make of the fine?
Well, first of all, Ron Rivera is absolutely disingenuous, because the minute Del Rio had the tweet, his first comment was, hey, it's a free country. Everyone's entitled to his own opinion. I really have no reason to even speak to Jack about this, and I'm going to leave it be. We'll see if anything comes of it. All of a sudden, in the next few days, there was a tidal wave of crap that rained upon the Commanders, and Snyder, Danny Boy, knocked on Ron's door and said, listen, we got a problem. We have to do something with Del Rio. And Ron said, well, we're not going to fire him. He's our defensive coordinator. Don't you want to win games? Well, then we've got to fine him. But there's no way Ron Rivera came up with that on his own. It's unheard of that a manager would fine a third base coach or a bench coach for conduct unbecoming. So this was part of the Commanders trying to help their own PR and maybe deflect away from some of the other things that were going on or the misogyny that exists. But I pretty much saw through that.
I only have to object to one thing this time. Isn't it the case that the commissioner of the NFL has said that Danny Boy cannot run his team, so someone else must have knocked on the door?
Oh,
if he knocks on the door, it's a violation, is it not?
You couldn't be more right. When Dan was fined $10 million and told that his wife has to run the team, that's like Clarence and Ginny talking about Uncrustables at the dinner table and not discussing what's going on either on the docket or what she does in her Gmail account. And I don't want to be political because, well, I may one day work for The Athletic. I mean, not Meadowlark or anything, but can you imagine? No conversation whatsoever between Dan and Tanya about who runs the team, because Tanya gets to run it, not Dan. It's just laughable.
I actually assume someone other than Daniel Snyder did say it, because Daniel Snyder, for years, did not do anything about his team's name. And my guess would be that while he's sitting in the south of France, he wasn't spending much time worrying about Ron Rivera. So I'm not sure who to give credit to, but I would suggest it's not Mr. Snyder. I agree with you that probably Ron didn't think of this on his own. Somebody in the organization actually understood the problem with this and made it happen.
The only reason I did want you guys to walk me through the absurdity of putting Daniel Snyder on the shelf over here because you must, because there are toxic workplace allegations, but you both view that as ridiculous camouflage, that he's running the team, he's just not allowed in certain parts of the facility. And how much precedent does any of that have in sports?
Well, they remember MLB suspended Steinbrenner. That's when the Yankees, in theory, finally got good. That's what everyone says in New York. It makes me smile because they started winning. Forget the fact that it was Jeter and Pettit and Posada, et cetera. But it was because George had to take a back seat from his meddling. It's the equivalent of getting, when your manager gets ejected in baseball, do you know the manager is still running the game? Not Bobby Valentine style, but everything, every pitching change, every pinch hitter, everything is being decided by the manager. I've been in the office with our managers because I'll go down there as soon as he gets ejected. He's not sitting there drinking beer naked, just watching the game like a fan. He's got the lineup card. He's got the game. He's got the video room going on. So yes, it is. It's silly to think that Steinbrenner was not involved in the Yankees during his suspension. It's even sillier to think that Snyder's not involved in the Comanskins.
Particularly given that they are both very authoritative, very domineering personalities. The only thing I'm surprised about, David, is it potentially occurred to you that the ejected manager might get naked? Is that sort of a usual sort of clubhouse
underwear, jock strap? Yes, it's disturbing. The whole thing.
Is it the first thing you would do?
It's a weird.
Yes,
it's
actually.
What David is, you get yourself a bottle of beer
and you take your clothes off.
Yes. You have no idea how many naked managers I've seen.
MLS does a 10-year, $2.5 billion deal with Apple. Explain to me, guys, what this means for the future of sports rights and tech companies.
I have a point of view. I think that this was a very, very creative deal. I think it's a unique deal. And I think the first time a commissioner, and let me recuse, or let me at least disclose that Don Garber is a friend of mine, but I believe this despite, not because of that, that he managed to get his international rights, his digital rights, his local rights, and his national rights all to come up at the same time. I think he foresaw that it would be very difficult to get the increase he wanted to get from traditional media companies because of ratings. And he went and found a solution to that with Apple, which is let's make our home one place. We'll have one partner to try to help us grow those national audiences. We'll have one partner pay us a lot of money, a big increase. They went up about 300%. So I think that this is should make every traditional media company feel concerned.
But I guess I would ask, John, you don't think that Don Garber, as your friend, if you spoke to him about this, I'd love to know, did he not think that he was getting more for the digital rights, selling them as a group, than the individual teams would get if they went out on their own? Because only a few teams actually make money in MLS on their local broadcast rights. Don't you think the power of the few overtook the sum of the many, and that's what made him make the decision he made?
Well, I think it was all of it, right? The MLS traditionally has not made much money on either local rights or digital rights. But I think it's a 10-year deal. I think he's gazing into the future. He sees that most sports is going to be viewed on streaming services in the future, whether those streaming services are traditional media companies as part of a streaming service or just pure play streaming services. That's where people are going to watch, and that's how he got the most money.
My interpretation of this deal is that he went 10 years because he wanted to protect. He didn't think in the next 10 years that he was going to make a dent. Contrary to what was said by someone just recently, that soccer in 2026 was going to be the number one sport in the United States, I think Don Garber probably has a more realistic view and has a 10-year horizon for the type of rights fees that would be absorbed by companies like yours or like ESPN formerly. And so therefore he took the money while he could, and Apple was the perfect partner because they're trying to dip their toe in the live sports rights area. And for them, it's not even a penny of stock price, right? It is totally an irrelevant investment. And for him, he comes out looking good and he wants to reevaluate because 10 years goes by like that. And so I do not believe that collecting all of your rights together is a smart move, because a better league gets more money separately.
At this very moment, that is true. 10 years is a long deal. And my theory about rights always was that they're very expensive on the front end and they're very inexpensive on the back end. So my guess is he had to go long to get that kind of eye-popping number, right? $2.5 billion. He had to go long.
Why is that eye-popping? Because they were expecting 250? They were expecting 1.25 and got 250, or 250 versus 500? What makes it eye-popping? Because compared to the
other
teams.
What makes it eye-popping is 10 times 250, right? Doing a three-year deal at 250, which I don't think one would have been possible, but doing a three-year deal at 250 is 750. That's not eye-popping.
But it still puts them seriously in third, fourth place, right? I mean, that doesn't make them, this is not a major rights deal for anyone. Would you have looked at this deal at ESPN and said, this is a major investment for us?
At $250 million, yeah, that's a major investment.
Because it's MLS.
$250 million is a major investment. You could get a lot of good rights. You could get the four majors in tennis for that amount of money. So this is a major deal. This is a big deal. And by the way, again, the number, again, every commissioner, and here I can actually make my friend maybe a little bit unhappy, which is look what's in every headline, $2.5 billion. You will never see a headline in any of the press releases that says 250. They all say 2.5 billion. That's what the eye-popping part is. Again, I always thought that a long-term deal favors the person who bought it, not the league.
John, you said concerned. I'd be concerned that Apple has gotten into this game. Who should be concerned and why?
I think that any traditional media company should be concerned, because David pointed it out. It's one penny on the, it's not even one penny on the Apple stock. None of those other companies are nearly as big. So I think everybody should be. But I think to the extent that you have a large streaming service that you're associated with, you're probably a little bit less concerned than if you don't have a large streaming service.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With three times the electrolytes of the lead in sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes, so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
The Athletic this week was in the news because the New York Times owns The Athletic, and now having public political opinions, even tweets, this is forbidden at The Athletic, a sports institution that is covering journalism down the middle at a time that some fights are necessitated and some people do not want these fights because the sports consumer has spoken, the focus group show, the sports consumer does not want all of this with their sports coverage. And so we no longer exist at ESPN. John Skipper, your thoughts on the...
Wait, which focus groups... Have you been in where people have expressed the opinion that they don't want sports with their politics?
This is what was explained to me as I was making my exit at ESPN. It was explained to me that the corporate policy was the corporate policy because the focus groups showed that the consumer does not want the politics with sports. And I would say I don't talk about politics. I talk about race.
What are the focus groups saying about Metalark?
We don't do any focus groups. And if anybody ever tells you that they made a big decision because of a focus group, they are just copping out because they don't want to tell you that this is what they want you to do. Because the only reason to do a focus group is to have some backup for something you want. Because everybody who ever walked into watching a focus group finds in the focus group confirmation of what they thought before they came in my opinion. So now I have the research industry all over me, which I'm happy about. They can do research about me and they'll find out that that opinion is very unpopular. You have two issues here, right? The first is that an employer has the right to tell you what their company policy is. They do, right? They can tell you to wear a tie to work every day. That's okay. They can tell you that you got to come in at 9 o'clock and leave at 5 o'clock. So the New York Times has the right to set policies for what people can do. However, the second issue here is, in my opinion, separating politics from sports is impossible. It only matters your definition of politics, but you cannot separate issues of racial injustice and misogyny. I mean, how are you going to report on the Washington Commanders and what's going on without it moving into politics, assuming that some portion of this country, which it does, thinks that women's rights are politics, or thinks that, you know, Black Lives Matters is politics. Black Lives Matters is not politics. Black Lives Matters is human rights issues. It is people protesting about racial injustice. Is that politics? If you define it as politics, it's politics. I don't define it as politics, but you're trying to suggest that you can define politics in a way in which writers and reporters cannot write about it is silly.
Well, there's two things. One, to me, John, it's nuanced, right? You're allowed to report what's going on, but you cannot then give your opinion or make it have it related to gun legislation. You can report about an elementary school shooting, but you cannot say that there should be, you know, background checks. The other issue, and you would know this more than I just with the Marlins, you with a far bigger company, when you're doing your corporate policies and saying what you want done, isn't it what you want done? So you used a word that I was interested in, which was I. Right? That's an interesting word because that means you're the arbiter. So The Athletic was told by the New York Times, capital T, what they can and cannot talk about. But when you're running your company, isn't it just you? That's pretty dangerous.
Well, it's usually more than one person having this discussion. But yeah, ultimately, whoever runs the New York Times with whatever cabinet or council they have has made this decision. So I don't disagree with you about that. I do, once again, quarrel with this notion. So let's use two examples. When Steve Kerr at the press conference, who has a history that makes him particularly appropriate to talk about gun violence, when he says 50 people in Washington are preventing anything from happening on gun safety, is he stating an opinion? Or is he stating something that is factual? I would call that a fact. I would not call that a political opinion.
Yeah, I would not. So the answer is it's not 50, right? It's 52, but that now we're just splitting hairs. But if you think what Steve Kerr did was not political, that that was like the definition of political. If Steve Kerr were a coach who did not have the background that he had, suffering a loss in his family from gun violence, that would not be looked at too well by Adam Silver.
So when Mothers Against Drunk Driving lobbied not to have people drink while they drove, is that political?
No, what's political are what the punishments are for drunk driving, what the laws are. How people, so what they would say is political, John, is when you're pulled over, are you being pulled over because you're black and that you had one tiny swerve, but if you're in a nice car and you're white, then you're on your way. But if you're, but there's, you're pulled over because you're black, you swerve, and then they find one joint and then you're in prison for 40 years. That's so political.
So it's not political when a group of mothers suggests we should do what we can to make cars safer. Is that political or not political? You
that
said
is not
punishment.
Political.
They didn't say punishment. They said we need to make it safer for people not to get hit by drunk drivers.
But let's do it right with Uvalde right now. People are saying we've got to make schools safer for our kids. Is that a political comment?
No.
Yes. I'm sorry to say it is. It shouldn't be, but that's not an accurate depiction of where we are as a country right now. That is a political statement.
I wouldn't say that's a political statement. When you get into how you make them safer, you're edging into gray territory. I don't think there's anything political about it would be better if we figured out ways to make schools safer, if we figured out how better to make it difficult for people to who should not have guns to acquire them. I don't think that's political.
But the reason why we're not making improvements as a society is because everyone thinks like you do. You're okay with everyone saying what the problem is, but the minute someone comes with a solution, now we're into political territory. I think that we have to say, we have to bring it back two layers. And we have to, obviously depoliticizing it would be ideal, but you have to acknowledge that when someone says we need to make our schools safer, that's not helping make it safer. We need to know how. And when you get into the how, that's when people are entrenched in their positions, whether it's arming teachers or disarming everybody.
David, did you have something else on what The Athletic had to do here with the New York Times? Did you have other thoughts here?
It's tough when you have a takeover. So the equivalent of this is a team that is working for a general manager and they are building for the future, protecting all their draft picks. Then the GM gets fired. A new GM comes in and says, we're trading all the draft picks. We're going full Omar Minaya and we're bringing in high price free agents. It's a total change of direction from what you expected when you joined the company. And some people may not want to be a part of that. When The Athletic was sold to the Times, they were specifically told that they're going to be left alone. They're going to be able to operate the way they've always operated. And I've spoken to a bunch of the writers there, and I would imagine you have too. This is a complete sea change when the Times took over from what they said to now what they're saying. And they're none too happy. So what do you do when you are part of a company that has a change in ownership and that owner changes his or her or their mind about direction of the franchise? Two choices. You either side with the owner or you look for a new job. And I think that's what's happening at The Athletic.
It's funny that he says that, though, because I would say to you, when you were my benefactor at ESPN, arming us with the power to do things on the political spectrum, that was fine and good. And then all of a sudden, the power changed at ESPN. And I was left with the choice that Samson speaks of, which is either eat it or move along. But Skipper, you had plenty of these to deal with. So walk us through at ESPN how you would navigate whatever the hell the corporate policy had to be as the entire country changed. And you had Jemele Hill on your watch.
Look, these things and David will agree with this. These things are very, very difficult. And they're difficult for the reasons we're pointing out right now. And they become more difficult as a country has become more polarized and where people aren't willing to listen to other people's opinions without it becoming personal or emotional. I have to try to manage my emotions on that as well, right? I need to be more open to listening to what other people said. We did try to navigate it by trying to separate, first of all, the people who did news from the people who did opinion. And that is an appropriate way to do it, right? And that's the way the New York Times does it. They have opinion columnists, and then they have people who report the news. But it's hard because there's a lot of middle territory. We tried to do it by doing that first. The second thing we did is we told people, you do not have a private public life. You are ESPN so-and-so. Now you're in difficult territory. And this is what Sage Steele is suing ESPN over right now, which is, yes, I do. I have a private life where I can say whatever I want to say. And when I go on the air at ESPN, I'm on the air at ESPN. When I'm not on ESPN, I can say or do whatever I want. Ron Rivera, Jack Del Rio just proved that there is no public-private life at the Washington Commanders. He can't tweet out something which is offensive to the organization because he doesn't have a private social media life. So John, those are two of the ways we tried. But I got it right 51% of the time.
Yes, John, if you're walking down the street and you run into one of your VPs at ESPN or one of your anchors, and they're wearing a Fox Sports shirt, they're not on the air, they're not working, they're walking to Saks Fifth Avenue wearing a Fox Sports shirt. What is your view of that?
My view would be I would walk up to them and I would say, this will be the last time I ever want to see you wearing a Fox Sports shirt in public. You may wear it at home while you're in your personal boudoir, but in public, you may not wear that shirt. That's just completely and utterly inappropriate.
This is a first. I never thought who had boudoir on the bingo card for today's show.
I am stunned, though. What a great question from Samson. I would love the idea of Skipper marching up to someone indignant. You will change those fabrics. You will take them off immediately. You will go home shirtless if you must.
I can guarantee you that if the CEO of Coca-Cola saw an employee wearing a Pepsi shirt, that CEO would say, don't ever let me see that happen again. David, I believe you have a point of view on this, and I believe that you have actually exercised your point of view.
Oh, I have. I fired an employee for wearing a Red Sox jersey to a Red Sox Marlins game when they were not working. And I got a picture of it off social media and immediately fired the employee. It is unacceptable. And I got a lot of lack of support from fellow employees and other people who work there saying it's his time. And so I said, no, it's my time. And the equivalent, and I learned this at Morgan Stanley. When you're working for Morgan Stanley, you don't board a plane with a Goldman Sachs knapsack. It's immediate grounds for termination. You talk about Coke, Pepsi, and what they're wearing. Can you imagine walking through the Atlanta Coke offices and there's somebody drinking a Diet Pepsi at their desk? That person wouldn't get to pack their stuff. They'd be escorted out in 3 seconds.
You do see the only difference between David and I on this. I would have given him one warning.
I just love all of it because it's so ridiculous. How many people have you fired, David? Do you do the personal firing? If there were a number on this, I don't know how many people you've had to fire either, Skipper.
Oh, I like firing people. So I take the opportunity to fire whenever I possibly can because I can use it as a learning experience for them and try to help them out and try to point out what they did wrong. But in this case, the employee was enough levels below where I was that I did not do the firing, but I had it done within moments of discovery.
I like firing people. It's just absurd. It's absurd. Why would you say that out loud?
I never had a manager who I fired or a GM or anybody, head of marketing, anybody where I was despondent, right? Because if people get themselves fired, I don't think I've ever fired anyone in my life. Most times people fire themselves.
I believe Mr. Samson is excellent at performative art. And I think he means what he says. I don't know. I've had many sleepless nights when I knew the next day I was going to call someone in my office and dismiss them. And even if I felt that it was utterly deserved, it always made my stomach hurt. And I used to tell people, if you ever enjoy firing somebody or you enjoy even laying people off because you have to, I never did. I never liked it. I never wanted people working for me who enjoyed it.
Those are two different things, John. So don't try to paint me in this picture. There's a big difference between layoffs caused because people at the top want to keep making what they're making and you're in a recession, you're having share price issues, or there's a lockout and you're furloughing people. I do not enjoy that. I'm talking about people who I fire who deserve it, who have done something that actively requires me to fire them. It is my unadulterated pleasure to do so. Cost cutting and eliminating jobs? No, I do not find that pleasant.
I appreciate the distinction and I accept it. And I still find you to be a fine human being. But
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I am unadulterated joy. And aren't there some, though, David? Some must be a close call. Like, it's not always that obvious. Sometimes you have to fire people, but you don't have to enjoy it 100% of the time.
Let me give you an example. There was a guy I worked with for 15 years, very, very close. Of course, we're not going to mention the name. We caught him stealing. Stealing from another employee on camera. Hi, we have cameras here. He was someone I never thought that I would ever have to let go. I didn't mind it at all. I didn't choose to steal what he did. He did it to himself. When a manager, when Joe Girardi stands up and tells our owner to F off, of course I enjoy firing Joe Girardi. Anyway, maybe it's just me.
I doubt it's just you. And it's okay. Look, we don't need to belabor this. When you fire somebody, there are consequences down the line, right? Somebody's family has to figure out what to do. They may deserve it. I believe that almost everybody I fired, if not everybody, deserved to be fired. But I didn't enjoy it. Though there are a few people that I think about. If I could I can't. There would be exceptions, by the way. We'll go into that another day.
I'd love those.
Not anybody in the current metal staff.
Name one.
Nobody.
Name one. Give me one name. Let's make news. Give us a morsel of news by giving me the one name that causes explosive headlines,
John,
but doesn't cause you any real problems because you
don't.
Oh, no, you're right. I won't take the bait on that right now. I'll take it later some other time.
Oh, Samson.
Get Dan's hands.
Samson, we were right there. You played defense against the show. He was going to answer it. I baited him into it.
And
I'm going to find out on off air and I'm going to report it and I'm going to put it on the ESPN scroll. I will get this information out there through some means.
Even then I'll have to fire Dan. I would like not sleep for a week. So that would be awful. So please don't do that.
Can you fire me? I don't know what the rules are on this.
You guys are my partners.
No, matter of fact, I cannot. It's part of the governance that I cannot.
I don't know. I don't even know what the rules are.
You can do whatever the hell you want to do. You want to walk down the street wearing a Fox Sports shirt? You can. I can't do anything about it. You're the one in the world. I can't.
I'm coming in tomorrow with a ringer hoodie, me and Whittingham. The first ever NIL summit held in Atlanta, Ohio State. They say they've got 1,000 NIL deals. NCAA is investigating the Hurricanes and John Ruiz. You guys called all of this. It's going faster than I thought it would, but you told us a year ago that this was going to escalate and escalate quickly. How now, a year later, reviewing it, where is it different than you thought and where is it about what you expected?
We're in the Wild West, right? I mean, this is exactly what happened when there was the gold rush. Everyone is rushing to plant stakes in the ground, and there's going to be mess. And right now, I would call this the messy period. And I don't mean Lionel. I'm talking about there are people doing things that the NCAA did not in any way publicly expect to happen, but privately behind closed doors, all the politicians and all the courts and all the people who've been crying out publicly for players to get paid, they didn't think this was going to happen. This was as natural as a sunrise following a sunset.
There is nothing surprising about this. This is a hot mess. It will get worse before it gets better. And there is, that I know of right now, in any existing system of college sports, for this to be adjudicated, judged, reined in. There's no corral to put around any of this. This is going to get worse and worse. And I don't know how it gets better.
Well, I do. There's going to be regulation. exactly what everyone fought to not have. This, to me, NCAA created this mess because maybe they want to feel needed when you agree that the NCAA is not needed, right? The Power Five, they could do without the NCAA. Frankly, everybody could. But what if a federal government, shocking, is needed? And that's what the NCAA is, right? They've given the power to the states, which are the schools or the boosters. But what if the NCAA is needed to clean up the mess? They created a mess to clean themselves.
Yeah, I think the NCAA has a greater chance of being a victim of this than being the solution. I do not think the Power Five conferences will ever accede again to being governed by the NCAA in any way. They don't want to be governed by them. So they're caught. The NCAA, and by the way, the NCAA has to find a new leader. You talk about a difficult job to fill with somebody who's actually capable of doing anything impactful. I don't know how in the world they'll get anybody who can actually get anything done to do this. It's impossible. At the summit, by the way, I need to have a little fun. Tim Tebow said everything can be monetized. How difficult is that if you're a coach, an athletic director? You know what? Right now, I just want to put it out there that I would love LaCroix to call me and give me a little name and likeness sponsorship money. This is a very delicious papelmousse. Interesting that in the United States, they choose to call this papelmousse as opposed to grapefruit.
He's doing a commercial.
The average NIL deal right now is between $300 and $400. This must be worth between $300 and $400. And my address is 1111 Smith Avenue, Hoboken, New Jersey. Send the check there, please. That's not my address.
Like to give $400 to you to stop doing that read.
That was unbelievable. That he was doing a live spot for LaCroix.
Made it up.
For no money.
For no money.
I made it up. But by the way, it's an important point. You don't think it's going to look just like the end of a NASCAR race at an Ohio State game pretty soon, where everybody is going to be slurping from the beverage of their choice, driving home in the car that they've been supplied, wearing the T-shirt of the local movie theater that's paid them. It's going to be a mess. I think the players should get some compensation. The problem with that, of course, is that you're just making the playing field more and more unlevel, which is why the Power Five conferences should just go off on their own and do whatever the hell they want to do.
I'm sorry, you think the NIL rules, that's the dispositive part of why the Power Five should be on its own? Like, do you think that's the straw that broke the camel's back?
I don't know if it is, but the problem is it's now out. And so if the NCAA tries to do anything, yes, I believe the Power Five conferences will refuse to go along if it is helping them recruit. And it is helping them recruit.
Then what was Nick Saban complaining about then?
I don't know. I haven't had a chance to talk to him. And it would really make me sad if I had to fire him.
Oh, I'd be so happy to fire Nick Saban. You have no idea.
I appreciate the expertise from both of you. It is unlike anything else that you will find. I've told you before that sports media coverage of business is truly terrible. So we are grateful that John Skipper and David Sampson give us this time. On the way out, though, Skipper, you enjoyed firing Schilling. You enjoyed it. You enjoyed firing Kurt Schilling. You did. Admit it. Admit it. I've never talked to you about this. I'm pinning you down. Yes or no?
No, I didn't personally fire him. I will admit to being happy seeing the back of him, but I will not admit to enjoying firing him. That's slightly different.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.